Hello, friends. We're going to continue now. We're actually going back to the beginning of the book, Externalization of the Hierarchy. I'm calling these by a different name. There are some initial pages which I did not deal with. I worked from page 61 to 701. That's completed now. And now, from the beginning, we have our second program. I'm calling it 02A. Okay. Now let's see, where were we? He says, I have felt it wise to write a few words concerning the condition to be found in the world today, especially in connection with esoteric, occult, and mystical groups and the spiritualistic movement. Now, we do have as background the thought that he offered that the occult groups are the most glamored of all the groups. So, with that in mind, let's see what is said here. All true spiritual thinkers and workers are much concerned at this time about the growth of crime on every hand, by the display of the lower psychic powers, by the apparent deterioration of the physical body as shown in the spread of disease, and by the extraordinary increase in insanity, neurotic conditions, and mental unbalance. Now, this is taking us back to I think October of 1949. So just a little more than 70 years. And these conditions have not been ameliorated. Not really. The insanity is still prominent. The disease factor in the midst of this coronavirus pandemic is on display. And psychism is taking the place of the apprehension of truth. As for crime, it simply continues. All this is a result of the tearing of the planetary web. And at the same time, it is part of the evolutionary plan and the providing of the opportunity whereby humanity may take its next step forward. Well, when the protective web is torn, all kinds of undesirable influences from the astral plane can enter and do. The hierarchy of adepts has been divided in opinion, if so unsuitable a word can be applied to a group of souls and brothers who know no sense of separateness, but only differ over problems of skill in action. They've been divided over the present world condition. Some believe it to be premature and consequently undesirable and providing a difficult situation, whilst others take their stand upon the basic soundness of humanity and regard the present crisis as inevitable and brought about by the development of man himself. Okay. So, you know, some believe that too much, too fast may have been given, and they were not so much over the previous years for the release of occult information, which they considered to be a dangerous release, given the level of maturity of the human race, and others take their stand upon humanity's basic soundness and strength. They look upon the condition as educational and as constituting only a temporary problem, which, as it is, which, as it is solved, will lead mankind on the way to a still more glorious future. But there is, at the same time, no denying the fact that great and frequently devastating forces have been let loose upon the earth, and that the effect is a cause of grave concern to all masters, their disciples, and workers. And really, is it any different today? Well, maybe from the master's point of view, a different perspective may be appearing. We don't know. We've had a consciousness movement which swept over humanity for decades, and perhaps it has done some good. Right now, humanity is going through a great test before the conclave of 2025, and its response will be very important when the decisions are made at that conclave regarding the externalization of the hierarchy. So are we learning, or are we going down, or are both the case? Which side of this question do you take? Which do you think is more true? In any case, grave concern exists on both sides, but perhaps one point of view is a bit more optimistic and thinks humanity will make it through this educational process. The difficulty can, in the main, be traced back to the overstimulation and the undue strain placed upon the mechanism of the bodies, which the world of souls in physical incarnation have to employ as they seek to manifest on the physical plane and so respond to their environment. I'm remembering that one of the reasons why the esoteric schools are so necessary is that the bodies are in fact weak. The astral body is out of control, and the mental body is too concrete. The flow of energy pouring through from the astral plane and in a lesser degree from the lower mental plane is brought in contact with bodies that are unresponsive at first and over-responsive later. It pours into brain cells which, from lack of use, are unaccustomed to the powerful rhythm imposed upon them. And humanity's equipment of knowledge is so poor that the majority have not sense enough to proceed with caution and to progress slowly. Therefore, they are soon in danger and difficulty. Their natures are often so impure or so selfish that the new powers which are beginning to make their presence felt and so opening up new avenues of awareness and contact are subordinated to purely selfish ends and prostituted to mundane objectives. The glimpses vouchsafed to the man of that which lies behind the veil. The glimpses vouchsafed to the man of that which lies behind the veil are misinterpreted, and the information gained is misused and distorted by wrong motives. But whether a person is unintentionally a victim of force or brings himself in touch with it deliberately, he pays the price of his ignorance or temerity in the physical body, even though his soul may go marching on. So let's just say, basically, the unreadiness of the human physical body for the reception of these higher energies. That is a problem, causing concern, and of course, the physical body is not alone. Responding in an overstimulated manner. Let's see here. The difficulty can, in the main, be traced back to the overstimulation and undue strain placed upon the mechanism of the bodies, which the world of souls in physical incarnation have to employ as they seek to manifest on the physical plane and so respond to their environment. This is a problem. Now, DK said that through the increased use of vitamins and maybe through exercise, more widespread and general health consciousness, the situation could improve. And here's the question, has it improved? I think so. I think, as they say, we're no longer eating purely white bread as we did in the year 1950 and in the 50s, let us say. There has been a consciousness revolution and many more healthful ways have been found. Still, there's a long way to go. Coming into the seventh ray will help, and will create bodies which are stronger, more resilient. It is of no use at this time, says the Tibetan, to close one's eyes to the immediate problem or to endeavor to lay the blame for the sad failures, the occult wrecks, when the kundalini is prematurely stimulated and even drugs are used by student occultists. So it's no use to close one's eyes to the sad failures, the occult wrecks, for the half-demented psychics, the hallucinated mystics, and the feeble-minded dabblers in esotericism at the door of their own stupidity, or upon the backs of some teachers, groups, or organizers. We can't lay the blame there. Much blame can indeed be placed here and there, but it is the part of wisdom to face facts and to realize the cause of that which is everywhere transpiring and which can be stated as follows. Well, DK is simply being realistic about the attempts which have been made to make progress in the field of occultism, calling it, spirituality or religion or esotericism, It has been approached, he says, stupidly. His advice, of course, is sound, but there are so many so-called teachers out there who don't take into consideration, when they come from the East, the differences in the Western body and Western culture and so forth. And their students wind up in much trouble, much difficulty. sad failures, occult wrecks, half-demented psychics, hallucinated mystics, and feeble-minded dabblers in esotericism. Not a very pretty picture, is it? Anyway, we have to face the facts. Is this still going on? I suspect so. At that time, it was everywhere transpiring. And the causes can be understood in the following manner. One must be so cautious with these fires and with the customary attitude of impatience and the ambitious desire to make rapid progress. There is really no fast way, but there is a regulated way of progress, which in the long run is the fastest because it is the soundest. The cause of the growth of the lower psychism and of the increasing sensitivity of humanity at this time is the sudden inflow of a new form of astral energy through the rent veil, which has until a short while ago safeguarded the many. And maybe, you know, the first stage of the war brought that on. Now, actually, if I talked about 1950 before 1949, this is a letter from 15 years earlier, so maybe more like 85 years, 1934. So I just want to correct that error. Add to this the inadequacy of the mass of human vehicles to meet the newly imposed strain, and some idea of the problem can be grasped. A sudden inflow of a new form of astral energy through the rent veil. I think the first phase of the war did much rending of the great veil which protects humanity in general. Okay. Let it not be forgotten, however, that there is another side to the picture. Not just the side that causes these very unfortunate temporary disasters, temporary perhaps for the duration of an incarnation. Let it not be forgotten, however, that there is another side to the picture. The inflow of this energy has brought many hundreds of people into a new and deeper spiritual realization. It has opened a door through which many will pass before long and take their second initiation. And it has let a flood of light into the world, a light which will go on increasing for the next 30 years. So that takes us to the middle of the 60s, bringing assurance of immortality and a fresh revelation of the divine potencies in the human being. So this is the good side, so to speak, of this inflow of the new astral forces. New and deeper spiritual realization, and open a door to the second initiation and let in a flood of light. Let a flood of light into the world. These are positive effects. And with a little more caution, there would have been fewer disasters. And even to this day, there would be fewer disasters. Access to levels of inspiration hitherto untouched has been facilitated. The stimulation of the higher faculties, and this on a large scale, is now possible, and the coordination of the personality with the soul and the right use of energy can go forward, and with renewed understanding and enterprise. Ever the race is to the strong, and always the many are called and the few chosen. This is an occult law. A variation on that law is that many are called, but few choose, few accept. And that brings us to the category of the accepting disciple. There may be many who reject the necessary acceptances that will lead them towards accepted discipleship. We are now in a period of tremendous spiritual potency and of opportunity to all upon the probationary path and the path of discipleship. It is the hour wherein a clarion call goes forth to man to be of good cheer and of good will. You know, the mid-30s, the experiment with goodwill was conducted. And to be of good cheer and of good will, for deliverance is on the way. Well, this takes us back to the perspective of hierarchy during the 1930s. Probably very few of us were in incarnation at that time. But it's good to know the history, because momentous events occurred as a result of the inadequate seizing of opportunity in the 1930s. But it is also the hour of danger and of menace for the unwary and the unready, for the ambitious, the ignorant, and for those who selfishly seek the way and who refuse to tread the path of service with true motive. Lest this widespread upheaval and consequent disaster to so many should seem to you unfair, let me remind you that this one life is but a second of time in the larger and wider experience of the soul. How many seconds are there in a lifetime? If he means this at all literally and not just figuratively, or closer to literally. Anyway, a very short time. Let me remind you, he says, that this one life is but a second of time in the larger and wider existence of the soul, and that those who fail and are disrupted by the impact of the powerful forces now flooding our earth will nevertheless have their vibrations stepped up to better things, along with the mass of those who achieve, even if their physical vehicles are destroyed in the process. The destruction of the body is not the worst disaster that can overcome a man. He's basically saying, look, there are worse things than the death of the body. So even though there appears to be and is a temporary personal disaster, from the point of view of the soul, it is a very short period and is not a lasting disaster. Lasting disasters maybe have to do with choices that are made to follow the path of selfishness, and that can persist for much longer or even semi-permanently. It is not my purpose to cover the whole ground possible. We're on page 8 now. In relation to the situation in the field of psychism, caused by the inflow of astral energy at this time through the rent veils, I seek to confine myself to the effect of this inflow on aspirants and sensitives. These two words, aspirants and sensitives, are employed by me in this article to distinguish the awakened seeker after control and mastery from the lower type of psychic, who is controlled and mastered. It is necessary here to remind you that psychism, so-called, can be divided into two groups. Okay, so this is about the approaches made by those who attempt to master the lower psychic forces and those who are mastered by them. And although the person who is mastered by these forces is often very proud of this, of his susceptibility, not realizing that it is susceptibility, we have to understand a more desirable approach so that we can help people avoid ancient sensitivities, which were current in Atlantis and which had to be outgrown and have to be outgrown by those who are seeking a more mental focus. He tells us, you know, the sensitives, the mediums under Pisces and Cancer are less mentally developed than those who are found under Virgo, where Neptune is also a ruling planet, just as it is in Cancer and in a special way in Pisces. So what are the two groups? Higher psychism, lower psychism. The psychism which is divine and maybe has more to do with the Ajna Center, and the animal psychism involving the solar plexus. The higher psychism can be utilized as a method of inquiry, but the lower psychism runs rampant over its victim and is uncontrolled. The higher psychism is positive and lower is negative. And as I said regarding Virgo, the higher psychism is intelligently applied, and the lower psychism just happens and is somehow given more value, much more value than it should be. It's really a reversion to an Atlantean state of mind. And then the higher psychism involves mediatorship. Now, sometimes this goes along with Pisces. And the lower psychism, a taking over of the empty house of the psychic, and therefore mediumship. Well, I think that pretty well says it. And maybe a lot of us are not bothered by these problems because we have established some degree of mental control over our automatic, unconscious, instinctual sensitivities that were current long ago. But it is a problem for many. And the hint that it is a problem shows up in the many books on unsound psychic development that are found in the mystical esoteric bookstores, almost replacing the truly sound material. At that point, it was not so, but now it seems to be. Anyway, DK goes on to say that these distinctions are little understood, nor is the fact appreciated that both groups of qualities indicate our divinity and all our expressions of God. The higher types of psychics can also use the lower psychism if it is necessary. But usually the higher psychism and straight knowledge takes care of the matter, and one does not have to reawaken the animal forces, such as are found on the astral plane and even on the lower levels of the mental plane. For higher psychism, we have to travel above the dotted line which separates higher mind from lower mind. Okay. So maybe we'll understand why this is a problem. I mean, DK wrote a book called Glamour, A World Problem. And so much of the lower psychism, unless wisely and purposefully used, is all part of that glamorous scene. There are certain psychic powers which men share in common with the animals. These powers are inherent in the animal body and are instinctual, but they have, for the vast majority, dropped below the threshold of consciousness and are unrealized and therefore useless. We have passed beyond, we have transcended them. These are the powers, for instance, of astral clairvoyance and clairaudience and the seeing of colors and similar phenomena. Clairvoyance and clairaudience are also possible on the mental levels. They would be higher there. And we then call it telepathy and the seeing of symbols. For all visioning of geometrical forms is mental clairvoyance. That's an interesting statement. So at least, at the very least, if we are a psychic or a sensitive, we want to work through the mental variety of these powers. And not through astral clairvoyance and clairaudience and the rather uncontrolled type of phenomena that occur in relation to the astral plane with all of its glamours. All these powers are, however, tied up with the human mechanism or response apparatus, and serve to put the man in touch with aspects of the phenomenal world for which the response mechanism, which we call the personality, exists. They are the product of the activity of the divine soul in man, which takes the form of what we call the animal soul, which really corresponds to the Holy Ghost aspect of the human microcosmic trinity, you know, the personality. I think I'll, you know, use the color green to indicate that these powers are associated with the third aspect. So, you know, there's nothing necessarily inherently wrong with the areas, with the approach to the areas made possible. But that approach has to be under control. All these powers have their higher spiritual correspondence, which manifest when the soul becomes consciously active and controls its mechanism through the mind and the brain. When astral clairvoyance and clairaudience are not below the threshold of consciousness, but are actively used and functioning, it means that the solar plexus center is open and active. And of course, our goal is to transfer the energy of the solar plexus to the heart, which should be to a significant extent completed at the second initiation. So let's see here. I'll use the light blue associated with the sixth ray. And here the higher correspondences we can put in the more mental color. When the corresponding mental faculties are present in consciousness, then it means that the throat center and the center between the eyebrows are becoming awake and active. But the higher psychic powers, such as spiritual perception, with its infallible knowledge, the intuition with its unerring judgment, and psychometry of the higher kind with its power to reveal the past and the future, are the prerogatives of the divine soul. These higher powers come into play when the head and the heart center, as well as the throat center, are brought into activity as a result of meditation and service. So students of our type want to utilize the throat center rather than the solar plexus. And the Ajna Center, it's the seat of the higher psychism. And we're talking about something even higher than mental psychism when we talk about spiritual perception. This is of the soul. We're talking about powers at least on the higher mental plane. We are speaking of powers focused at least on the higher mental plane. And we have to have the higher centers, head and heart, as well as the throat center, active. So let's just say, at first, there is a transition from solar plexus to the throat, and then the addition of the heart center and the head center to the throat center. So always the awakening of certain chakras and combinations of chakras accompany the awakening of the various psychic powers. There was a disciple, the very first disciple discussed in the Dhyana One book, and he was a ray three soul, but with a six ray personality and a six ray astral body, and he had a very open solar plexus center, but a rather constrained flow through the Ajna center, about 15%, whereas the solar plexus was 60%, and DK was going to try to train him in psychism, but I presume, you know, to help him open his Ajna center more, and by training in the higher psychism. Okay, so let the student, however, remember two things. And this, I think, will confirm what I was saying a little earlier, that the greater can always include the lesser, but the purely animal psychic does not include the higher. So this is one factor, that the person who has the ability to use the higher psychism can also use the lower psychism, but the lower psychic cannot use the higher psychism if the individual is purely a lower psychic. And that the next, let's call this number one and number two, that between the lowest type of negative mediumship and the highest type of inspired teacher and seer are found a vast diversity of grades, and that the centers are not uniformly developed in humanity. So it's not just one or the other. There is a ladder of evolution of the chakras, giving different degrees of access to different levels of the subplanes, levels that are normally closed to the non-psychic. Okay. These are two things to remember. Let's see. And well, if it's not perfect, then it's just not perfect. Okay. The complexity of the subject is great, but the general situation can be grasped. The significance of the opportunity proffered can be understood, and the right use of knowledge be employed to bring good out of the present critical, let's say, uncontrolled, glamorous situation. And thus the psychic and spiritual growth of man be fostered and nurtured. It's interesting about the color yellow that he tells us if we wish to close off involuntary psychism of the kind that works through the solar plexus, much use of the color yellow, a Mercurian and mental color, will assist us in doing that. So the psychic has to be trained to rise up, the lower psychic, to rise up out of lower susceptibility and into a state of mental control of those ancient faculties. Two questions should, I believe, at this time engross the attention of all workers in the field of esotericism and those who are engaged with the training of students and aspirants. Well, you know, it's interesting here. The year this was written was 1934, and it was still possible that the Tibetan could get on with the teaching and training of his students without the interference of the precipitation of the second part of the Great War. And I think thus it would have been. And the Christ would have already appeared, and the hierarchy would already have externalized. But many things happened, and the release of atomic energy during the war was one of the truly important events which raised the threshold in terms of danger, or maybe lowered the threshold. Anyway, it became more dangerous for man to proceed in his present selfish and immoral condition. So here are the two questions. How shall we train our sensitives and psychics so that the dangers can be avoided and men can go safely forward to their new and glorious heritage? Well, we do have, interestingly, the Master Hilarion, a close co-worker of the Master Jesus, working on the training, the more scientific training of psychics. The marriage of psychism and sensitivity, or psychism and religion, or rather of science and religion, or science and sensitivity, is required. And he does have access to the Buddhic faculty in quite large measure, we've been told. And some of his writings display that. So he is one of those, you know, the sixth ray type has often the open solar plexus. Not so much the case with the fifth ray type. The higher centers more involved with mentality are opening for that type. So how can these two approaches be put together in a balanced manner? So here's DK basically saying, how do we train our sensitives and our psychics so the dangers can be avoided and men can go safely forward to the new and glorious heritage and not be caught in the clutches of glamour, which have resulted in the destruction of many? And number two, how can esoteric schools or disciplines, as they are sometimes called, make right use of the opportunity? Well, these are, you know, two big issues, and there is all kinds of erroneous training and dangerous training, if one can call it training at all. And often the students are not able to discriminate. They want, because of their ambition, they want speed. They want to achieve immediately. They want to awaken their kundalini, as it were, not realizing that they can burn etheric webs and bring about conditions of inflammation, insanity, and even death. So we're going to enter a new section here regarding the training of psychics. Let's see how long that goes on. Because when we enter an entirely new section, it tends to have a little length to it, and it would be better to do it all at once. This is a long section. And the next one is esoteric schools and disciplines. So I think the wisest thing would be to wait until the next program and deal with the training of psychics. And then perhaps after that, maybe another program for esoteric schools and disciplines. Now, so many of us are in esoteric schools now, and many of us are fortunate enough to have come under the influence of the great and sanctioned Theosophical stream, which pours through Master KH, DK, and Master M, and which used a highly trained, sensitives in a way, but telepaths like HBB and Alice Bailey, and then who knows who's coming next, if it is different from one of those two. So we've been exposed to very high quality material, and we've been safeguarded thereby, because the Tibetan basically has been so lucid in his explanations that he has warned us of the pitfalls and the dangers and the swamps and the briars, you know. The path of occultism is thorny enough without wandering deliberately off into a place where there is no path and only thorns. So we have been fortunate. And if we take the teaching to heart and obey it, it's like following the four major pieces of advice coming in a treatise on white magic: to inquire the way, you know, to ask our inner knowing and our inner soul knowledge and even our higher triadal perceptions and intuition, and to obey the inner impulses of the soul. The master works with our soul on the higher mental plane, and when we obey the master, we are obeying the soul, and when we obey the soul, we are obeying the master. Occult obedience is a big problem, and people want to make their own rules. Well, maybe there comes a time when one can be so thoroughly wise and yet autonomous that that is possible, but in the beginning, it's best to be very scrupulous about fulfilling the necessary observances. So obeying the inner impulses of the soul by careful reading and application of what the master has given us. We can always find ourselves deviating, and the inner monitor has to be alert. And then we've been given a great teaching. We have to learn how to pay no attention to the normal worldly sagacity. It may come from the most quoted, it may come from those who are the most worldly wise, and our material may look otherworldly and seem to be of lesser value than worldly sagacity. But still, we know where our loyalty lies and where the path of real occult development lies, and it's in this paying no attention to the sidetracks, even though they seem to be wise. It doesn't mean that we are impractical in the world, but when it comes to the choice between that which the master advises and that which is advised by the worldly wise, we know what to choose. Now, all of this is easily said, but as we, you know, journey through our incarnation, we have many moments of decision. And it's not just a question of choosing between good and bad. It's a question, as DK tells us, of choosing between less good and more good. So even, you know, goodness comes in its categories, and we should always choose the highest good. I mean, what is advised by the sagacious in the world may be reasonable, but it does not lead us to our goal on the path of spiritual occultism. And then, of course, in all this advice that we've been given in this marvelous book, Externalization of the Hierarchy, with its articles and essays, sometimes offering items of information which can be found nowhere else in the teaching, we have to absorb what is said, apply it, and thereby set an example. Maybe that's the hardest of all, because we are all tempted to deviate or to maybe do less than otherwise we could do. So the simple factor of setting an example for others is what is most inspiring to those others. If a person, a teacher, is divided between what he says and what he does, some degree of wise hesitancy can appear on the part of the student, because in short, we cannot practice what we preach, and I'm sure all of us have fallen into that dilemma at certain times, but, you know, presumably we'll get better with it. It is a thorny path of occultism, and there are many snares, many dangers, and dangers often of an obscure kind, which come from the counterforce, the members of the counterforce, warring militantly against the advancing aspirant, the advancing disciple. And somehow we have to learn how to stand steady in all this, and our training is what gives us the ability to stand steady, especially if we adhere to the training and don't just treat it as a mental concept. So the next time we get together here, let's see, what have we got here? This is page, we're on page 10. And I think we went as far as what page? Here we go. We were as far as page 5. And that was pages 5 to 10. And our day for this was the 25th, which is today. Reappearance of the Christ Day, Thursday the 25th. Oh, yes. And let's get rid of the pluses and instead use dashes. So now we'll take this down to that point where we're going to begin two definite sections, which will teach us about the training of psychics and about the disciplines of esoteric schools, in which, you know, many of us are entered, for sure. Yeah. So here, let's call this the end of 02A. And it's page 5. Oop, we have our pluses again. Page 5 to 10. And beginning with 03A, as we take up the first part of the book that I skipped, and that will have to be tomorrow or some other day. And we'll begin with pages 10 at some day. Okay. All right, friends. This will be a program about an hour in duration. Lots of love, many blessings, and we've been given wonderful material and training from the Tibetan. Of course, to make a success of training, we have to participate. It's not just a question of being spoken to. It's a question of attempting to carry out that which is recommended. And so we will do that as much as is within us to do it. So we'll get this to you on Makara, you know, where all the other, there are 93 programs thus far. And then a few will be in the, regarding the front of the book, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe another 10 or 12 programs regarding the beginning of the book. And we'll see you shortly if you're studying all this. So bye for now.